Blog Talk Radio.
So, you're a philosopher? You're a philosopher?
Yes.
You're a philosopher?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yes.
You're a philosopher?
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
So, you're a philosopher?
In about 4 seconds, a teacher will begin to speak.
Yo, I'm sitting in for Philly Phil. I got this is the second time I had the greatest pleasure of sitting in for the big man in charge, Philly Phil, doing a philosophy. The philosophy is a political commentary show. We just kind of talk about everything, and we feature old school hip hop, and we talk about life as we act European. So even though today I'm going to be sitting in here by myself in this big old seat, some of these big old shoes, I want to ask you today, what is Blackonomics in America? And Blackonomics is a mixture of Black economics. We have a great history of economics being kings and queens and throughout the generations, and came 1942. Where we see this repeat of us losing all of these legacies. And then we get to the 1800s and really 1555, where we're pushed and traveled all over the world to be slaves. And then we see Black economics 200 years later. Then we see 1865, give me a vote. Remember that? We're talking about it. 1965, give me a vote again. I'm going to give me a vote again. This time. Yo. I got a great show. I love you. I'll be back right after these messages.
When I grew up, was I poor? I'd have to say no, but I'd say yes to broke. You could even ask Mo. He's met both of my folks. I bet the dagger and cloak. My hope is coconuts and cocoa skin women from Kokomo. I won't blow my first million up in smoke like a villain. That's how you get hooked on glass pipes with low ceilings. Fucking hookers for the feeling. Get jacked up, jumping off the roof of AM, PM for the BBC museum. I don't want mine and dimes and nickels. I want big bills so I can spend it with my people. I'll be thrifty. Cause I know I can't take it with me. Mad Child, Mocha Abbey, Rob the Viking, Buck 50, Mr. Brady, Elemento. No dust to settle, Mr. Swan's on the boards and levels. We've come to prove that we can move and lose them with the tempo. And now you're riding with the rebels, we all have potential. We're young, we'll make millions.
Brilliance, shake pavilions. Take Brazilian girls into my world, show them what real means. Kill fiends with extra tapes on mammal music. Hear shrill screams as freaks tweak their body, don't confuse it with another guy. Once the fuse lit, discover the high heights, then you lose it completely. I don't compete, we treat the heat seekers to a universal audio freak. Niggas speak free, unique looking, yellow with good hair. I own a Triton and I love ripping on wood snares. Rim shots whatever, since way back in the woods where me and Prev came from and everybody would stare. I have no trouble bubbling, a little something is better than 12 years for nothing. Kept the love intact and the buzzing rap, got my name on it. My cousin Ab stamps his brain on it. I'm loving math, freedom and take the train on it. I'm sipping coffee, the brain tonic, remain sonic. Ripping awfully cold, heating up like a waffle mold. Put a little something in the bill for we real
to make millions. It takes a brilliant mind, a very valiant effort with many hills to climb.
It hurt feelings,
though they will heal in time. You're here for now, accept it and never kill in crime.
To make millions,
it takes a brilliant mind, a very valiant effort with many hills to climb.
It hurt feelings,
though they will heal in time. You're here for now, accept it and never kill in crime.
Yeah, I don't go to parties no more. People ask me how come self-made millions. Millionaires, that's the outcome. This Libra Scorpio ain't rich, but getting closer. So getting kids upset, writing shit I'm not supposed to. What happened to the mystical world and next dimension? Dragons and Vikings, yo, pay attention. I've been there before, had freestyles for days. I remember taking people through my lyrical maze. Back when money wasn't shit, went through my spiritual phase. Back then I didn't have a care in the world, life's fantastic. Laughing, watching walls, breathing, dropping acid, blasting airs off ramps. From backside boneless to loss of track of time, to faceplant the homeless. I found out that the joke is that I was the brokest. Now I'm out to feed my camp and I'ma never lose my focus. So don't provoke us, I'm trying to stack these ends while keeping substance.
Yo, that was Scorpion to make millions of I just want everybody to know that here today talks about Black economics. And first, let me please define for you what Black economics is. Before I get started, I wanted to say
had the opportunity to research him, by 1850, he was a free Negro, as they called it back then, living in District 69 of Pulaski County as a free Negro. And he owned land that was worth $400 in 1850. So, in looking at Black economics, you know, I kind of started looking at his time, because before 1850, before the Emancipation was ever written in 1865, here you see a Black man that owns land. You see a Black man that has a family, and he lives in a militia district of free Negroes where other Black people lived around him. So that kind of took me back when I first decided who still was helping me. He was like, and I was like, yeah, that would be really great. We've talked about Black economics all the time. But to listen back to Black economics in the 1850s and the 1800s were prevalent then. So before we started, I wanted to define economics. So economics is a social science that seeks to describe the factor which determines the production, distribution, consumption, goods, of goods and services, formerly known as political economy. Now, please know that the management of production, distribution, consumption of goods and services are always ruled and voted on by one political component or another. But today, Blacks, they still struggle to have a political voice in America. Nevertheless, even though they assert their voices on the abuses of law enforcement, have we really asserted our voices today on Black economics? We're going to get more back into it after this message, but I just want to say that we are doing some really great things over at DCT. This show is brought to you by thechosen.org, and right now, if you go to our Facebook, which is The Chosen Publishing, or Chosen Publish, at Facebook, you see that we're starting a documentation. We're documenting every historic, you hear me, right? We're documenting every historic economic area amongst Black people. So right now we got Springfield Avenue was Newark, New Jersey economic capital for Africans born in America. We have Auburn Avenue, Fort Atlanta. We have Daniel Island from Charleston, North Carolina, and we have Harlem for New York, and also we have the hub in the Bronx for New York as well, because New York was always happening. So we're going to come back after these messages, and we're going to talk about, you know, more on Black economics. And right now, let's go to Rebirth and from AZ, Asiatic. Let's go back and talk about history.
How can I be torn from the pages of history, How can my name be scraped off the pyramid walls when I sat with pharaohs and kings? You think you know, but you have no idea. This track's here is like a breath of fresh air that shade from sun rays. Family supper on Sundays, had to run astray, pack up and run away. Fountain of youth, fountain, feel like a younger age. Make sure my son okay, shit, that's the mission. College tuition, hope he get accepted to Princeton. If not, got his bell for prison. I know the pressures of the oppressor, it's hell living. Feel like I'm Mel Gibson, killing them kindly, finally. Niggas untie me, mommy, let her banani, but I can't make you my body, never. Made for the cold weather, haters, y'all know better. How can I fall? I was told to hold it together. Listen, no intermissions, I am so in position like Ali enlisting hookah, box me the distance, rhyming. Not a police caller, give orders to creep on ya. I master the street corners, relax in the feet sauna. And fuck if y'all don't like it, I'm here and I've shown niceness. Up here in my own likeness, I zone as my own psychic. For niggas holding my clothing to get you open. I'm toasting and bitches posting, approaching with mixed emotions. And Vetti like military, I vary like Ben and Jerry's. Compare me to him and scary, I'm Mary and cemeteries. And losing is not inside me, stay moving from paparazzi. I'm proving the angels got me, I'm proving my game is cocky. Your money can never make me, my guns, they don't come with safeties. I hung with the ones that's crazy, I come from the front of Macy's. Just shopping and dropping 80, so stopping with proper ladies. I'm hearing a lot of maybes, when nigga is hot as AZ. Hey yo, it's a rap, baby. We got him right now. The cold platinum, man.
My name is Miss Trish. How you doing?
Let me introduce you to the infamous Miss Trish.
Thank you for having me on. I love Philly Phil. Shout out to everybody, the Chosen Media. I just wanted to compliment on the Black Economics series. I'm from the South. I'm originally from South Carolina. And my great-great-grandfather was a free black man, a nigger, a divine one. He was a free black man that had to wear a red jacket to show his freedom here in South Carolina. And I think what's so much more remarkable about my grandfather and my family is not only was he a freed black man, he was a free black man that brought his wife and her slave-born child that was that she had gotten raped by the master out of slavery. We own land, we own huge pieces of land. And not only that, he was also in politics. So the black economics has been around for a long, long time. And we have so much power and so much knowledge and so many abilities to be, is a quote unquote again, excuse me, the nigga, the divine ones that we are. And so if you just look a little deep into your history, you'll find that we've been stable in the economy all since we've been here. We just didn't, we only were able to see the segregated part. We only were able to see the bad things of racism here in America. We were never exposed to the knowledge of who we were as a people. Not only that, if you go back to my home in Charleston, South Carolina, blacks were running their businesses there. They were making the baskets. They built the homes. They planted the fields. They obtained the land. And even till today, I know that there are black families in South Carolina, the Richardsons, the Browns, the Williams, and so forth and so on. They still own land that we were brought here on to build.
Let me ask you this, Ms. Trish. So first, I want to go back first to the word nigga, right? So Ms. Trish, this is so hilarious. Ms. Trish, she does this skit where she talks about how, you know, nigga comes off the walls of Egypt and how it means divine one or God or king. And so that she says when Master was whipping you, he was like, psh, I hate you, divine one. Psh. King. Yo, I think that was one of the best jokes, you know, because sometimes we having this big beef in America about what nigga means and we think it's a racial epithet. But imagine somebody calling you by your rightful name and saying to you, calling you by your rightful name, but putting negative connotations behind it. You know, I don't know whether it was Eddie Murphy who said, or a comedian that once said, his mother used to call him motherfucker, and that's what he thought his name was for a while. He thought his name was motherfucker.
Same word for us. We were called nigger for so long.
Yeah, so excuse my French, but I just had to get that out there. But the thing I wanted to talk about is, so you had your family, you come from a very rich culture. Your family actually owned land that was the first, that land that the first Greenville house sat on. Tell us about that.
Well, from my understanding from my father is that, again, my great-great-grandfather was a free black man in Pitkins County, South Carolina, the Greenville-Easley area, and he brought my grandmother out of slavery. Not only did he buy her out of slavery, he brought her slave-born child out of slavery.
And can I ask a question? So he married this woman, right? So this is like your grandmother, your great-great-grandmother, right?
Yes, and she raised my father, but he brought her out of slavery, and he brought her and her child out of slavery. Again, he was a freedman who was not only in politics, he also fought in the Civil War. And so he had established himself, and we owned the the land where the Greenville, the original, the first Greenville Memorial Hospital was on. And wow. His plan was he gave it, he left it for all of his children for her to be divided amongst them. But he left it with the slave-born child because he thought because of her whiteness or her white background that she'd be able to maneuver in the economic system better and really make this prosperous and there would be no trouble for her. But what eventually happened is she sold the land. She never split it among my family. And my daddy says his grandfather, my great-great-grandfather, went to redeem himself and the family, but decided not to do so, turned around and let everything go.
Wow. And how many stories do we have like that, people, where we know for a fact that, you know, our ancestors owned land? Let's talk about America. Well, even here, when Europeans came to America, Black folks was already here. Indians, us as Indians, people of color were already here. So then you turn around and you got things like the Slave of Tears. You have where they're gentrification, using gentrification tactics that are used still to this day to coddle people into one small area and then take the land from them. So these tactics that have been used by capitalists, not white people, but capitalists, since the beginning of time, they've never changed their game plan. I tell you, if we start fighting fire with water instead of fire with fire, that we would get a lot further. It wasn't one of your ancestors on the Slave of Tears?
My grandmother was Cherokee Indian and raised on the Asheville, North Carolina reservation. And so it was told to me that my great grandmother was one of the Indians along the Trail of Tears. And so we have so much history, again, amongst ourselves as a Black people, if we would only just dig and research it and share it with a newer generation so it can strengthen them to be those same people. We built this country. We put that, and again, I go back to my roots in Charleston. If you go down to Charleston, South Carolina, there's a street called Rainbow Row where all the houses are different colors because back then, in order for a slave to know which master's house they were to go to, they made the houses different colors. To this day, 2015, that area of town still exists. So that tells you, so we built those houses. We built those cobblestone streets that you see. So if you go back to that rich history, that who we are, it will empower you. It's only empowered me to say that I can do whatever I need to do, be whoever I want to be, right here in America.
Wow. We're going to be back in a second. Ms. Trish, please don't leave the line. We're going to be back in a second. I want you guys to hear what white supremacists are doing now. And again, white is not a nationality. It's not the color of a people. If a person can never tell you that they are white, a person really can't tell you that they are Black, because those two descriptions are not a nationality. They're only a nationality under a corporate system, that if you ascribe to be a system of this corporate system, then you thus can call yourself white and Black. And more so, I want to say, when you call yourself Black, that you're subscribing that there's a such thing as white. Allow people to call themselves out by their nationality. America is a beautiful experiment. It's a melting pot. So we have people from Germany, from Africa. We have people from Italy, from New Zealand. We have people from Asia. We have people from the islands. We have people from the Marshall Islands. It takes so many cultures to make up America, that to allow a whole group of people to blink themselves with white and call themselves superior is unfair to all of humanity, because that white that we subscribe to as a citizen of the corporation, then we say that we subscribe to the capitalism and our own destruction within it. I'm going to let you listen to Neely Fuller Jr. It's a little bit long, it's about 8 minutes, but I want you to hear from Mr. Doing now, and then we're going to come back and we're going to talk.
The revolution only probably do as well. When we start to talk about the revolution, what are the white supremacists doing now? They're doing four basic things. Racial showcasing, racial population tailoring, racial dislocation, and white sacrificing. And these four things are designed to produce maximum sophisticated confusion among the victims. And so far as being somewhat successful worldwide. Now I'll start with the first one. What is racial showcasing? That means taking huge numbers of black people and putting them out front. There's going to be more of this all over the planet. Many, many millions of black people that you will see who will be rolling in money. They'll be able to showcase the places where they live. They'll be able to showcase their knowledge and expertise. So you have television now, you have all of the mediums for doing this, for showcasing huge numbers of black people. I will say it will eventually run into the millions, so many that you won't be able to count them. Now, what is this for? This is for any black person that starts talking about racism in the future. It's going to be laughed at because they're going to be able to showcase so many black people who are what you call quote-unquote successful that it will seem that racism has been put out of business. But white supremacy is a world business, and like any other business, it works on profits and losses, which means percentages. You go into business, you expect a certain amount of loss. If you're in the grocery business, well, you might have a load of asparagus that is spoiled. But overall, you will make more profits than you have losses if you're going to stay in the business. Now, so the white supremacists know that the cost of doing the business of white supremacy is going up. They can no longer get away with Joe Lewis and Lena Horne like they did years ago. They have to have many, many, many more black people who are going to be showcased. I made up this term just to explain it. You have to make up terms because they won't make them up for you. So now that's the first phase or one of the first elements in the maximum confusion. And so that black people won't be able to say, they'll say, well, you know, it must be something wrong with me that I'm down and out and don't have a biscuit to eat, because there are so many millions of black people who have so much, so it can't be race. But see, for the 4 or 5 million black people who would be showcased, there would be hundreds of millions worldwide who won't have a biscuit. That's the way the business operates in the future and will be. That's the way it seems to be going according to what? The evidence, according to the logic. The other is racial population tailoring. That's number two. Meaning they're going to be killing huge numbers, either directly or indirectly, of non-white people. When I say black people, I mean, you know, non-white. Anybody who's in the non-white category. And doing this on an ongoing basis. Not to try to kill them all. Because when you're in the business of racism, you don't kill off the thing that you need in order to keep racism going. Your ego trip, which is what it's really all about. But you do tailor the population so you can keep them controlled. So you'll kill off a few million in the Congo. Then you'll, a few years up the road, you'll kill off a few million in Nigeria. And a few years up the road, you'll kill off a few in Mexico. And on and on and on. And you will highly select the places where you do this. You'll have it all computerized, where you kill off huge numbers, or you have them, even better still, kill off each other, like you do in most of the cities in the northwestern part of the world, called the northwestern hemisphere, having black people gun down each other, you know, non-white people, the brown people gunning down each other, gangs and all that other foolishness, see. And you kill them off, you know, and you just keep this going, and you egg it on, and you put things in place that will see to it that it just keeps going that way. It never stops, because that's the mentality of the people. And this is racial population tailoring. In other places where the people are reasonably sane, they don't have a tendency to kill off each other, then you do things like dry up the water or poison the rivers, dump toxic waste. It's all kinds of ways to do that racial population tailoring. All right, then the other, number three, is racial dislocation. Keep them moving. People who are forever on the move through eminent domain, urbanization, urban renewal, gentrification, or here again, drying up the river. You build a dam 800 miles up and the river seals off the water behind the dam. I mean, the dam is sealed off, the river is sealed off behind the dam. So that means that all the people down in the valley there, they don't get any water. They need water. They depend on the fishing industry. So now they have to come and work for you because there's no more water there, no more fish. And you give them minimum wage and a promise for the future as long as they look up to you. So they'll know they're completely dependent. But keep them moving. If a black person in the Northwestern Hemisphere starts getting that second generation house, then you come through and say you got to build a highway. That's the technique. Now these are things that you asked about how the white supremacists operate. These are the ways that they operate. The white sacrificing is the fourth. And this is, here again, all four of these things are for maximum sophisticated confusion among the victims. So you're not confused. You're keeping your victims confused. So you have white sacrifices, meaning it's kind of parallel to the racial showcasing. But these people in this case are white. Like in any army, any military operation, you know you're going to have some losses. So some white people are written off under the system of white supremacy. And a lot of white people are aware of this. They don't like it. But they're told that this is the cost of doing business. Just like a person who goes into the army and knows full well you might get killed. But it goes with the territory of trying to defend your bigger operation. So white sacrifices mean you'll have some white, more and more white people on park benches, more and more white people begging on streets. They will be greatly visible. But what you won't pay attention to, because black people never pay much attention to what white people are doing, we just watch each other. See, they know that. You'll be passing millions of white people who are doing well on any city street. And for the handful of white people who are falling through the cracks, you might say, sitting in front of the subways or begging in front of these delicatessen. For the handful that you see doing that, up under the bridge and all like that, it will give the illusion that it's not about race, that white supremacy is officially out of business. So there will be more of these white sacrifices, and they will be greatly visible. But compared to the number of white people who will be prospering, it will be very negligible worldwide. Now those are the four maximum sophisticated confusion elements.
Wow. Everybody, that was really Fuller Jr. You could definitely find that on What Are White Supremacists Doing Now? And the reason why I selected that particular clip is because I wanted to go back to the beginning. Economics is a social science that seeks to describe the factors which determine production, distribution, and the consumption of goods and services, formerly known as political economy. Now, please know, like I said, please know that the management of production, distribution, consumption of goods and services are ruled by and voted on by one political component or another. Right before we left to go to the break, I was telling you about how you know, voting power and how, you know, if we, that power that we have, like back when my grandfather, who is Solomon Bennett, I'm going to say his name, shout out Solomon. He was born in 1805, but by 1850, he lived in Pulaski County, Militia District 69. He was a free Negro, and he owned his own home, $400, in 1850. Miss Trish came on, and she told us about her family who owned land and how even, you know, owned land on Greenville, the original Greenville Memorial Hospital, where that sat, that was their land, and how that land got sold from up under them. One thing that we need to understand is like the voting power. Now, we can go back South versus the North and look at comparisons of what was happening. And what I see is in the north, like in New Jersey, that's my where I was born. In New Jersey, you have, since 1776, all people were able to vote in New Jersey. Everybody. All the way up until 1807, where they rescinded and didn't allow the black man to vote anymore. You see what I'm saying? And then you see, before my grandfather was ever, before the Emancipation Proclamation was ever signed, here you see people, Miss Trish's family, my family, your family, go look it up. She's telling you to research, go look it up and see that they have this dogmatic principle that we were slaves and lowly and we always suffered crap, but we owned our own land since the beginning of time. You know, this is who we are, you know, so, but our power came from voting. And so even in the South where you weren't allowed to land and property that was worth something, $400 in 1850 is a lot of money. And then we see 1807, they're rescinding this, they're taking all of this back. Now, isn't it ironic? That's like 35, 37 years. I'm not going to say that people didn't have a hard time voting. There was actually five states that allowed black people to vote. The five states were Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont, Rhode Island, Massachusetts. They all allowed free black men to vote. In New York, you had to be a black man who owned at least $250 worth of property. And by rights, if my grandfather lived up north, he would have been able to vote, but in the South, he wasn't, but he owned land. We say this to say that there's an economy and there's a dichotomy that Africans have always had. In 1865, when the Emancipation Proclamation was so noted and wrote and signed, then we had this, you know, and when blacks were able to vote for the first time, it was so tremendous, they just rescinded it. And then later on, they bring in these Jim Crow laws. Now, I want to go back and I want to tell you about these Jim Crow laws. The Jim Crow laws had an etiquette. It was this guy. His name was Stetson Kennedy. He's the author of the Jim Crow Guide. He offered these simple principles and rules that blacks were supposed to observe when conversing with whites. Number one was never assert or even intimate that a white person is lying. Imagine that. Imagine, okay, the cop beat you and or a white person beat you or they did you wrong, they stole from you or robbed you. You can't even assert or even get intimate or even insinuate that they were lying. Never impute, never even think that a white person that a white person had dishonorable intentions. Number three, never suggest that a white person is from an inferior class. We see what happens to the groups who say that they are God or that they are superior or that they come from this higher intellect. Number four, never lay claim or overly demonstrate superior knowledge or intelligence to a white person. Number five was never curse a white person. Number six is never laugh diversely at a white person. Never laugh hard at a white person. And number seven was, and this is the big one, never comment upon the appearance of a white female. We know that this started the Oklahoma riots. We know that a young man got hung for whistling at a white woman. We know that that was the taboo. Imagine all of the Oklahoma riots, the whole Oklahoma riot, Black Wall Street. Bombs were dropped on this area, was started because a black man stepped on a white woman's foot in an elevator. And that was the Oklahoma riots in 1921. I want y'all to go research that. But as we move forward, like I was saying, that a lot of times I get to meet a lot of people. You know, people are beautiful. I get to meet people from all cultures when I travel. And in America, mostly, when I meet white people, I say, hey, what's your nationality? And they'll say, I'm white. And I say, no, where are you from? Where do you come from? What's your history? And they say, oh, yeah, I'm Irish and I'm Italian, or I'm German and I'm French. You know, they have all of these beautiful mixtures of dichotomy of who they are, and that's their nationality. And even if you were to meet black people in America, if we understood and took the blood test and understood, you know, where we came from, we could say, oh, you ask a black person, where do you come from? They could say, I come from Zaire, or I come from Mali. I come from all of these beautiful places. So in my opinion, and again, I say this is my opinion, not the opinion of the Philly Phil Show, Philly Phil, or the Chosen Publishing, or the Chosen.org. My opinion, there is no such thing as a white person. there's no such thing as a black person. Sometimes I may slip and say black person. I really, what I'm saying to you is black, African born in America is what I'm saying to you. So that, one of the reasons why I picked that clip is because it references the corporation that allows citizens to claim themselves as white or black. By no means do I want to separate cultures. As a matter of fact, I believe until all religions come together, that we're never going to understand God. I believe that until all races come together and accept themselves as human, people of color, human, that we're never going to have peace on this earth. So I think that through unity, we find strength. So I, one more time, going back to Nellie Fuller Jr., he's talking about all of these four things that white supremacists, the corporation and its citizens who claim themselves to be white, to separate themselves from their nationality, now they're a corporate signature citizen. And a corporate signature citizen is a person who has a birth certificate and will mark white or black on their as their nationality, or their parents accept them or sell them to be white or black. And even your birth certificate is worth money, but I'm not going to get into that now. Today we're talking about black economics in America. And so we're talking about the history of black economics, and I can go back even further. I'm pretty sure you guys, please make sure you post and comment and go back further than me. I just wanted to take it from here so we can understand, since the Emancipation Proclamation was written, since most of our great-great-great-great-grandpa's parents lived, we had economics, black economics in America. As a matter of fact, because of Jim Crow laws that I just spoke about, we weren't even allowed to shop and or sit or eat in white establishments, which meant that we had to come back and we had to shop black. We had to shop in our own communities. We had to stay within our own confines. Now, some of the areas now, I got to tell you, if you go to the Chosen or the Chosen Publishing's, if you go to the Chosen Publishing's Facebook, we have an event there, and that event is we're asking for you, your brothers, your sisters, your cousins, your uncles, your friends, tell everybody. We're asking for you. Do you know the name of the historically black economic area in your city, state, or town? Please go to the event, post it on there. August 5th, 2016, our 20th anniversary, we're going to release a report and we're going to give special gifts to every single person who posted. So right now, we got a lot of invites out there. We want you guys to join the conversation. We want you guys to post because we can't do it without you. Because the lions never have historians, the story is always told from the hunter's perspective. We have to start documenting our history. We can never stop documenting that. And me, myself, as I traveled, everybody, I would always ask the students, hey, well, what is the area that used to be the historically black popping area where everybody shopped? And they always would take me to the street. So we have a few of them. I'm going to go through a few. I know Springfield Avenue in Newark is one. Auburn Avenue in Atlanta. Auburn Avenue in Atlanta, Georgia. Springfield Avenue in Newark, New Jersey. New York had Harlem in the Bronx. New York had Harlem and the Bronx, which was called the hub. And we know about the whole, like, Madam St. Clair, who was a policymaker who helped change Republicans to Democrats. We know about that. We have King Street in Charleston, South Carolina. And we want you to give the name of the street that was economically popping in your area. And if you can, ask what happened to it. What does it look like now? And, you know, because from my understanding, everywhere I've traveled, it seems like all of these streets were destroyed. There's no more black economics. Auburn Avenue is one of the very few streets that I see that still has a dichotomy and an economy. But what happened to Auburn Avenue was horrible. As soon as they gave us the right to go shop at Macy's, we left Auburn Avenue high and dry. Springfield Avenue, the riots came and the military came and literally, you know, destroyed, shooting people out of the project windows, and people were falling out of the windows. And then a lot of these streets were destroyed by us during the riots when we burnt down our own neighborhoods. So we got to take all of this is black economy in America, because if I can push you to destroy your own land and get you mad and make you destroy your own area, then I don't got to worry about you being my competition no more. When we come back after these messages, we're going to talk about really, like, what is the greatest asset of the Africans in America as far as economy? We're going to talk about, and I'm just being general right now, because I want you to stick around. I want you to give me a call in, and I have not even given you guys a call in. No. I want you to give me a call at 4914-205-5568, or you can call us at The Chosen Publishing at 1-866-823-0023 and leave us a message about your favorite show, about any question. I have so much more to share with you. I'll be back right after these messages.
About it. We take yours while you pout about it. Truck, step out, booze, wanna crowd around it. You can see me on Optimum TV. Come on your bathroom, turn the light out, scream Bloody Mary. 1, 2, 3, Chic ain't your usual friend. But I can set you up like Heisen and walk straight at the end. I'm done with ice and charms. I'm trying to ice my whole cast when I'm gone. Pull up with class on the dawn. Once I meet him, I greet him. Kiss his feet for freedom. Tell him thank you, Lord. Cause on earth I was getting bored. Now resurrect me back to this cat called Sheep. So I can make this album and get back the cats that's weak. 230, 6'2. Me bunch for you, that's like a cat versus a pit bull. Gun, no flip bull. Keep hunger and plan for the future. Cause you figure you gon' be older. Way longer than you gon' be younger.
Keep alive. Money, power, respect. You needn't lie. Money, power, respect.
The clock tick. I really love hair, but I'm still a hostage. Two personalities, check the posture. Smoke out the mouth, flare out the nostrils. Thinking death, the life seems scary. I pass the graveyard, seeing people here merry. I ain't chilling till I'm out parachuting. Race my man in my own climbing for about 10 diamonds. 25,000 apiece, forget streets. Trying to own the island, forget about wildin'. Try riding. In the car that be gliding. If I showed you where I live, you would think I was hiding sling bricks. The chicks that don't speak English. Wake up in Trinidad, like touching them rich. Come back, private jet, live on set. You can spit gold, I can spit baguettes.
Money, power, respect.
The African Community Centers presents 101050, a basic plan for the empowerment of the African community worldwide. 101050 is to commit 10 hours a month to a community-based organization, to commit $10 a month to help fund the organization of your choice, to commit to spending $50 of your monthly budget to support a black-owned business, to have faith in our victory. Visit us on the web at 10-10-50.org or call us at area code 770-908-6144. That number again is area code 770-908-6144. Stand up and be down with 101050.
Peace and blessings, family. I'm back. You're listening to The Philosophy. This is Tracy from ETL. This is Black Economics in America. Philly Phil allowed me to fill these very big shoes yet again. This is my second time guest hosting for Philly Phil, and I absolutely love the opportunity. Today we're talking about Black economics in America. So in part one, we talked about the historical factors in 1800s where Africans had had not only political power in the North of the right to vote in some areas, but that they owned land in the South. And we're talking about not North versus South, but the political power of the North and the South combined. So, you know, for a long time they've been telling us, you guys are ratchet and poor, they brought you up here on a slave ship. Here we come to find that a lot of us were already here. Then I talked about you know, what is white and black, and how that is not a person nor nationality, but that that is a citizen under a corporate structure that was created way later on after 1776. So we see that we've had economic power. And I'm going to tell you, in my opinion, what destroyed economic power in America, I mean, black economics in America, and you might get mad at me and I don't really care, but it was welfare. It was a welfare state. It was really the Civil Rights Act, and where they said, you know, with no disrespect, if you, you know, because, again, Republicans, black people have been Republicans since 1865, all the way up until 1932. Are you understanding what I'm saying? I'm sorry, 1929. So black people have been Republicans, and then you see this switch, black people converting over, and then it was this stock market crash come. Let's get into their stock market crash. I'm going to get into our stock market crash. Who do you see spending the most money in America? Black folks. What me and Trish talking about, the niggas. This tell you who is economically in power. Black people today, and I'm not even there yet, but black people today spend $1 trillion a year. We could help knock out the deficit with the money that we spend. $1 trillion a year. But let's go back to the black economics now. Right before the break, I told you guys that we have an event on Facebook at The Chosen Publishing, and that we're asking you, what was the historically economic black area in your city, state, or town? What was the area? I don't care whether it was just a street or whether it was a block. We got Springfield Avenue in Newark, New Jersey, Auburn Avenue in Atlanta, Georgia. We got New York and Harlem, and we got Bronx, which back in the day in the 1800s was called the Hub. And we also have King Street in South Carolina. And we got a couple more, but I want you to go on Facebook and I want you to tell us, in your area, what was the black economic center or street or block where everybody went and all the black businesses were? Tell us that, okay? So, and when you do, on our 20th anniversary, we're going to run this for a year. We're going to collect and research this information for a whole year. And when we're done, on August the 5th, 2016, we're going to give a report, and every person who posts their comment or their city, we got a special gift. We got a special gift for you, okay? So let's go back to Black Wall Street. Black Wall Street was considered economic areas where black entrepreneurs thrive. They produced engineers, doctors. They produced physicians with doctors and all. Like, there's a difference between a physician, a doctor, and you having a doctorate. And these are doctors who went to the highest point of education that they could go. We had physicists. We had all sorts of people, inventors, who made up of Black Wall Street. And in Tulsa, Oklahoma, the reason why we know about Black Wall Street, because Tulsa, Oklahoma was one of the very, what was a very large black portion of Wall Street. So let me just give you like a little brief history. So a white man gets on an elevator with a white woman. I don't know how predestined this was, but these are the events. A black man is on an elevator with a white woman. She screams, "He stepped on my feet." Now, I already told you, during the etiquette laws, the Jim Crow etiquette laws, and these were the time of Jim Crow. These were the time of Jim Crow. Never comment upon the appearance of a white woman. So you know doggone well you wasn't supposed to touch a white woman. It was Mega Evans. It was a young man who got hung just for whistling at a white woman, and this man stepped her on her foot. He touched her. You know, they had some other ones. Never light a white woman's cigarette, because that implied intimacy. You see? So this started a riot that was so bad. Now, back in the days in Oklahoma, and I've been there, my son, he went to college in Oklahoma. Back in the days, all the blacks lived in the South. Now, that's always kind of normal. Like, you know, the South Side in America is always known as the ghetto, the hood, you know, South Central L.A., you know, Trenton, South Jersey. It's always known as this very, like, and Trenton is dope, but I'm not dissing Trenton. But I'm saying, like, the South is known as this horrific place where you know, where blacks come from, the hood, right? So these rich people, rich African people who were born in America, this is where they live and they thrive. And they're the doctors. We have our own doctors. We have our own schools. We have our own medicine. We're inventing these things. We have Madam C.J. Walker. We have all of these things that's happening. We have our own economic structure. Well, this guy supposedly stepped on this woman's foot, and boom, they show buildings being bombed from the top of them. They said that there were planes that the president at that time had been testing out, and he used it to test on black people in Oklahoma, and they dropped bombs. They destroyed it. You could go and just look up Black Wall Street, look at the Oklahoma riots of 1921, and you will see the devastation. And ironically enough, they said only 100 people died. But if you go to Oklahoma today, and all you folks is in Oklahoma today, know doggone well that all the white people live on the South Side now. Now, isn't that ironic? In 1921, the South Side was a predominantly black area, like in every other area. People on the North Side are the uppity, and people on the South Side. But now, all of a sudden, white people are all in the South Side. They own the South Side. It's just predominantly white area now, which goes to show you that that was one of the greatest forms of gentrification, aside from removing us, taking over our complete country, aside from taking over Africa through medicine and mythology, that was another great form of gentrification. Let's just kill you and get you out of here. Yoli Fuller Jr. said that you'll see, you know, them putting black people in the front. And right now, black people, we have a spending power of $1 trillion. Now, let me just go over some brief statistics, right? So a new Nielsen's report by the Nielsen Company, it was entitled "The State of the African American Consumer." The report notes that this population of African Americans, and I'm using their words, has buying power of nearly $1 trillion. African Americans made 17.4 shopping trips to households to convenience stores, which means we support bodegas, as compared to non-African, buy less so that we don't stock up on stuff, which I know that's not to be true, because everybody in my neighborhood, you know, we went and we bought food by the bulk because we one fed each other, barred sugar, soap, eggs, onions, you know what I mean? So we always bought in bulk. I've always seen that in my life, my mother and my grandmother. So I don't know where to get that theory from. But they kind of say that we go to the store more, but we spend less by maybe about $700. So they said, overall, black people, we spend $6,138 per household per year, as to where non-Africans spend $6,883, so about $700. But this spending power is what I'm talking about. They said the number of African American households earning $75,000 or more grew by 63.9% in the last decade. That means people are making more money. Let's go on. The percentage of African Americans attending college or earning degrees has increased by 44% for men and 53% for women. Higher educational and professional success, along with a lower birth rate. Now, I've been telling you guys for a long time, if you follow me, I'm T.L. Wingfield on Twitter, and that's W-I-N-G-F-I-E-L-D, like a chicken wing in a baseball field, T.L. Wingfield. I've been telling you guys this forever that, you know, there's more black men in college than in prison since 2002. Teen pregnancy has dropped 53% amongst blacks and Latinos since 2008, 2007. And these things we didn't even know about until President Obama came in and started releasing these White House reports. You need to start going and reading those reports, because they are about you, poor people. They're about you, white, black, purple, and Chinese poor people. They're about you, okay? So we're talking about, you know, we already know when a president is elected, like when Kennedy was elected, he was the first Catholic president that ever existed. Irish people kind of came up out of that slump of being discriminated against. It's a little bit harder for black people because, as the first family of the earth, this has been going on since before 1942. But we brought, you know, we brought Italy out of the Dark Ages just for the church to put them back in the Dark Ages, along with everybody else. Imagine, and I'm going to a whole nother country, but I just want to talk about the mythology and how they think and how they rule through religion. You take a person for 400 years, 500 years, they had a Dark Age and people couldn't even read. Nobody could read the Bible except for priests and highly educated men. This was a whole transformation where they were saying, well, we can write anything about women. We can write anything about people of color. We can write our own story, and we can write and scribe over this. They could have changed the Bible. They could do whatever they wanted to do at that 500-year point. We got people here in America who we've been enduring slavery and racism for 400 years. That's been our economic, you know, downfall, so they say, but which I don't believe that that was. It's just a trick to keep us distracted, like Nellie Fuller said. That for 400 years, and we forgot in 1850 that we was rich and owned the land and was up to par. We had to abide by some rules, but we still had money. We still had our own economic system. You see sisters in the 20s, they dress so dope. Look at these chicks that go back and type black women or African-American women or African women in the 1920s. They got the little dip hat. They got the pencil skirts. I love that whole style. I love that whole era. But we're talking about, you know, we had more senators at the beginning of the 1900s than we have in Congress today. So in 400 years, they made us forget who we were, let alone, you know, who we are now. But now we're ruled by money, power, respect, although that's one of my favorite songs. I wanted to play the end of that song with DMX, but I had to get back to the show because I really love that. I love DMX. I love the Lox. Lox is the greatest hip-hop group, along with Fugees and some other cats. But Lox and Fugees, they my number two, one and two. I'm sorry, Fugees and the Lox, Lauryn Hill, I love you for life. But getting back to the subject, this is some real stuff. You know, we got to go back and we got to research our history. We got to go back and understand who we are as people. We have to go back to the past to understand who we are today. Get past the reasons why I honestly advocate that we stop cussing in hip-hop music is because, do you know that when you cuss in hip-hop music, not talking about you saying damn or that's messed up or, you know, I can't say these words here, it's a Philly Phil show, but when you say these words and you say them sparingly, that's one thing. But when every other word is a curse, you degenerate the brilliant mind of a child. The Wall Street Journal had a report where it said that African children born in America far surpassed three times the amount of European children born in America until they hit the third grade. I said to myself, wow, what is that about? So I went and looked and started doing some research, and I found out, oh, ironically enough, the first test they ever give children in school, first standardized test they ever give children in school is in the third grade. So they could definitely underprepare these black children so they don't look smarter anymore. And then no sooner than a child is eight, they're exposed to all the music, even before then. You know, we got three-year-olds, two-year-olds, one-year-olds that's exposed to our music. Where it was a time in America where we had, as adults, we did our thing. Marvin Gaye talked about sexual healing. You know what I'm saying? But there was a time where we separated our children from our problems, meaning we separated our children. We allowed children to be children and allowed adults to be adults. And so we had an arena for children and we had an arena for adults. But now we popping Molly's and in love with the cocoa, and it's running on radio, top spins, cursing on radio, all throughout the music. And when you know what music, especially African music, does, it's in rhythm with your heartbeat. Like marijuana bonds to your melanin. The music actually follows your heartbeat. So not only are you hearing it, but you're thinking it, you're feeling the music, you're sensing the music, you become one. It bonds with your melanin. So now you got a three-year-old who's bonded with being in love with the cocoa. You hear me? We got to stop that. We can sit and talk about how these conversations. Y'all can call me uppity bourgeois. I don't give a damn. I'm telling you my truth. We need to start intelligence of the music. They continue to destroy us because they take the most ignorantest, and when I say ignorant, I mean you ignore the truth about your own people. Ignorant. They take ignorant music and they put it at the forefront, and then they spin it 20 times in 1 hour.
in 2-3 hours. You just keep hearing the same garbage over and over again. And I'm not dissing the dude who made I'm in love with the cocoa, because I'm telling you, I was singing I'm in love with the cocoa, and I thought dude was really talking about cocoa because I love chocolate. Like, I love chocolate. You know what I'm saying? And then my grandkids and my kids had to come back to me and say, you know what you're saying you in love with? And I was so hurt, like, I can't believe I was singing that around these kids all this time. I thought dude was talking about Coco. I had never even heard the whole song. I heard the hook one time in passing, and it just was catchy. You want to know why? Because it was in rhythm with my heartbeat. I hope you hear me beating my chest, because it was in rhythm with my heartbeat. You see what I'm saying? So imagine a little girl, and Beyonce, you dope. You one of the greatest entertainers. If you listening to the show, I would love to just say to you that you are brilliant in everything you do, and that you have been such an advocate. And people don't know this about Beyonce, but you have been such an advocate in freeing your people and freeing the minds of your people. And a lot of times they would take the track like, you know, surfboard, that thing a lot of kids don't know, but now they know. They ain't stupid. They ain't dumb. You know, they want to grow up and be drunk in love, because that's the sensation that they get through the music that Beyonce, that you give them. They know. And again, I'm not dissing you. I love you. I love all people of color. I love all humans. I love entertainers, even if you ignore the truth of your people, i.e. hence ignorant. I still love you. What I'm saying is there is a place for children. There's a place for adults in our economic arena, in our systems. You see what I'm saying? Eat them spins that you can't get on radio. It's not all about the money, because now once you get the money, then you get the power, then you get the respect. Well, that's ass backwards. In that song, those are hood rules, yes. But let me tell you how it happens in the business. You see what I'm saying? You'll have power, like in the entertainment industry, you'll have fame, which is considered power, way before you have money. You have respect way before you have money. Money usually comes after you get the rest of that stuff. So for hood rules is you hustle, you make some money, people will see, well, word, dude, can I work for you? And then you'll get respect because you got a click under you. That's hood rules. And that's entertainment. And I totally understand. But Dame Dash was on a Breakfast Club not too long ago, and he talks about these people. They're called culture jackers, and they influencing. That's why you have to realize was written so long ago. DMX had wrote that way before and wanted to put it out, and he was able to do that through the locks. God bless us. It's a dope song. But Dame Dash was talking about economics, and although I didn't agree 100%, 99% he had me, in the sense that we've always been entrepreneurs, we've always worked for ourselves, we've always done these things, and then when we continue to do it, we'll continue to be better. Right now, we're spending $1 trillion a year into the same economic, corporate, social system that seeks to oppress, kill, steal, and destroy our spirit. We're responsible for our own music, we're responsible for our own children. We're responsible. There's no Social Security check, no food stamps, no welfare that's going to ever give us freedom. I went back and I said liberalism destroyed us because, realistically, although not, it wasn't the end of Jim Crow, as soon as they allowed us to go to Macy's, we dissed every black person because they just wasn't good enough when, you know, give you stuff, tell it to your body. We had love in our community where, you know, a brother go get his shoes shined and wear the top hats and be beautiful. You know, we had senators and power brokers. We had Madame St. Clair's in Harlem changing history, converting all of these black people over to a democratic system. Because was they really allowing them to vote in the South? No, this is an up north thing. Read the book Policymakers about Bumpy Johnson and Madame St. Clair. Read it. You know, I ain't took a break in a while. I'm not going to take a break. I'm going to get to ending the show. I just want to end by, I'm not even, just give me a second, because I got to say this. $1 trillion a year collectively. They said that $1 trillion, when black people, the brother from Powernomics said, by the time the black dollar doesn't even circulate our own community one time, there is, America makes up of 16, black America or
Africans born in America make up 16% of the population of 350 million. So just in an estimation, I'm going to say 3 million people. If the dollar circulated one time amongst $1 trillion 3 million people, everybody would have $1,000 if it circulated one time. That means if we kept the money in the community, every single person could have $1,000 a year if it circulated one time. In European communities, money don't leave the community, especially like in Jewish communities and like Little Italy and Chinatown and even in Hispanic communities, money doesn't leave the community until five times. So if they were us, they'd be clocking an extra $5,000 a year. That's income tax money right there. I just want to give some tips before I go. We have to start paying our bills in advance. When you're on time, you're behind time. So if you got, I want you to look at economics, black economics like this, because we know we got the money. You know what I mean? We know we got the money. We're spending more than a trillion. As a matter of fact, it's 1.38 trillion. I didn't say that wrong. It's 1 trillion. Okay, so it's $1,038,000,000 that we spent in 2012. And they estimate that we'll spend $1.3 trillion in 2006 by 2017, that this is how much money that we'll be spending. And all I'm saying is 10, 10, 50, baby. Dedicate yourself to a black organization. Spend 10% of your income at least within your black community. You know what I mean? You know, volunteer or donate to a black organization and watch that money circulate and watch how money comes back. You didn't even realize how it comes back to you because right now we can't see it economically how it works. Try it and you'll see that you'll just have more money. People will be shopping with you. People, sisters, go back to sewing clothes for goodness sake. Stop buying this stuff out the store. We was the illest dressed sisters in the 60s. All I remember is my mama and all my aunties having fashion shows, and they made our clothes. I went to school, and my teacher said, Tracy, where you get that coat from? That's beautiful. I said, my mother made it. She said, no, she didn't. And I said, she did. She walked over to me and takes the tag off the back of my, looks for my tag, and the tag, my mother sewed the tag, and it says, Tracy. We used to make our own clothes. I love that. Let's make our food from scratch and stop supporting fast food places that is ultimately destroying our bodies. But let's get back to the real economics and some tips that I got for you guys before I leave. If you got a cell phone bill and your cell phone bill is $600 a year, pay the bill for 6 months or pay it for the year. If you got an electric bill and you know your electric bill is $75, $100 or whatever, pay it up for 6 months. Pay it up for the year if you can. When you get your income tax, pay your utilities and all your utilities, and even if you can, your rent or whatever, up. There's no need for you. If you get your income tax and you go out to Walmart, who exploits people, who disintegrates health insurance for people, then you deserve that TV not to even work 6 months or a year after. You buy that garbage with your income tax. That's stupid. Not my rule or not my goal to call people dumb. I'm saying it's stupid. That if you got your money, you got $5,000 for them three kids you got, you take your behind and pay your utilities, your phone bill, and all that for the year and stack your money. And then the next year you invest in the business and stack your money. And the next year you gonna have money to stack some money. Pay your bills up. You might think that credit don't mean nothing in America. It don't. But always being broke means everything in America. Yo, I'm your girl, Tracy. I'm sitting there for Philly Phil. This is a philosophy. This philosophy is a political commentary show. He let me sit in and ghost test. You hear me, right? Guest host the show today. I just want to thank you for allowing me the opportunity to sit down and share some information with you. I'm a little bit more live wired than Philly Phil. But I love you, Philly Phil, because he's so calm. He can just disseminate the information so beautifully and just laugh about it. I'm all like raising my hand and stuff, but I just want to tell you that I love you, that you may not understand how many times I have lived and died for you. You don't know how much research I do so that I can educate the babies. You don't know how much I travel to try to make sure that
all people, all poor people, all people of color, you know what I'm saying, are educated and organized to some degree or fashion. I've lived and I've died for you many times over. Information that I give you is not to belittle you or make you feel bad. It's to advise you on how we could bring black economics. And when I say black, I'm talking about humanity. How we could bring black economics to a forefront in this country where our money is now our voice and that we need to start using it. I thank you for allowing me this platform, you and Philly Phil. I allow you for being so gracious as to sit and listen to the show. I pray that it was great. I pray more, and I pray for our continued unity and success. I love you. Let's circulate that dollar in the community. This show is brought to you by thechosen.org. I want to thank you, and you are all blessed.
Fine God, said the man who lost everything he owned. Looking stoned, I groaned back. Find a job, here's an application. Retaliation, here's a pamphlet. This stamp, my man flip. Threw his hands into his pocket. Pulled out a Bible with the design out of tribal. The next testament was his title. Look it over, a book, no sir. What the hell this got to offer? A small mirror on the bottom labeled author. Let's do impersonal, irreversible. Actions leave our minds scarred. Looking for the answers. Fine God, he said again, but I'm a veteran. Knowing that you are no better than or worse than. Compare my last enemy to my first friend. This bum gave me his shirt's pen. What the heck, you straight up plugging. Thinking that I'ma write you out a check. He said, what? I said, what? Snatch your book in hopes of finding a myth. Lifted up the front cover, broke the binding. I bring peace, love, happiness, and unity. Usually I blow it off, but I said, that ain't what you do to me. What you do to me is bring pain, hate, ignorance, and false alternatives to my community. He sat back and thought it over. With a look that's sort of sober, he stared me in the eye and said, I don't lie. Figure it out, me or him, him or me. Now we begin to quarrel over what's historical, but that's immoral. Questioning the oracle's origin, we're born through sin. You need to save yourself,